You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, all right. Welcome, everybody, to Here District. I'm Marcus Johnson. I am the captain of this vessel. That's an old song by Lakeside. My cousin, Fred Alexander, was the drummer for Lakeside. I got to give him credit. My first mate, Chris Johnson, my son. And Roy, you probably didn't know this. Roy Wood Jr., our guest, Chris Johnson and Marcus Johnson were the only father and son tandem to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA.
Oh, wow. That's a deep cut. That's some good trivia right there.
So 1975, I was on John Wooden's last championship team. 1995, Chris was a freshman. He won a championship for Jim Herrick and with Ed O'Bannon and that crew. Let me just give you the proper introduction. So we got Roy Wood Jr.
yes, thank you.
Raised in Birmingham, Alabama. Yep. Florida A&M graduate, journalism major, I believe. But
yes,
right now the host of Have I Got News for You on CNN.
Did your homework.
Formerly a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Oh, yes, sir.
But the thing that I want to start off with is the Hulu comedy special, Lonely Flowers. First of all, where'd that title? Welcome to Here District, first of all. But where did that title, Lonely Flowers, come from?
You know what, man? That title came from the idea that, like, we're just disconnected as a society and we're all beautiful beings. But I just think as a people, we're better together as a bouquet, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the more I thought about it, it's just that, man, I think the more and more you look at people and what we're doing now, there's a loneliness epidemic. People need friends.
Yeah.
It's people talking to us on camera phones in their car, seatbelt still on, in traffic. I'm not saying names spitting knowledge, but I am going to say you're a little lonely. And that's okay, because I'm watching it. I'm laying in the bed by myself watching you with your seatbelt on in traffic telling me politics. So
yeah, well, what's funny is that I got a 15-year-old daughter, Shiloh, and sometimes we'll take a friend of hers to a basketball practice or whatever. She'll be in the front seat texting the girl in the back seat, you know. They're just texting each other, you know. There's no conversation going on. Now, a lot of that is so that dad can't be privy to what they're talking about. But just that whole idea of what communication, where it's, I guess, devolved or evolved. I don't know.
Also with that title, Hulu, because they're a part of Disney, they want, like, just as a company, Disney, this is their first, like, deep dive into original stand-up content, right? Mm-hmm. So they're like, we want it to be a little bit more optimistic. Like you can't be completely, like, Bill Burr, who just dropped his latest joint on Hulu, his is called The Drop Dead Years, which is, like, the perfect Bill Burr title.
Right.
And so I'm gonna just read you some of my... These are some other special titles that I had that Hulu frowned upon.
These are ones that didn't make the cut. Okay.
Let's see.
Social Recluse, Happy Alone, The Happy Hermit, Loneliness, Friendship, and Sex Parties, Isolation and Sex Parties, Loneliness and Sex Parties, Someone to Be Alone With, Desolate Joy, Reclusive Roses, Concrete Flowers, Abandoned Optimism.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I like Desolate Joy. I like Desolate Joy, man. That hits.
They were like, no.
Quite a few of those would work. But just talking about the special, man, and my son Chris, before we came on air, he talked about, you reminded him some of Richard Pryor, just in terms of Richard Pryor's stories, the storytelling, the Tootleman, and
vivid,
the vivid story,
the descriptions.
I mean, is that something? It's got to be innate. I'm sure you grew up with that, but where did you kind of hone that? Was that playing those clubs, sleeping in bus stations before your mama bought you that car?
So it was two things, man. It was really about feelings and, like, regurgitating feelings, right? And then with Lonely Flowers, we made this special a little different because, like, my first 3-hour specials, they all on YouTube and you can see it. It's just me talking about politics in the world. And my third special, I kind of tell one or two stories, but this one, I really wanted to attach emotion to it. And so the thing I remember from my TV news classes was this thing about how the idea of painting the picture of what you're seeing and what you're experiencing. And, you know, that was very much something that's not normal in comedy. It's just you quit, get to the joke. But in journalism, and especially print journalism, which is what I was doing at the time, I thought I was going to be on my sports journalism, Mike Wilbon, yeah, with it. You know, like at the time, you know, when I think about a lot of the greats who were just really killing it, you know, the Kornheisers, I'm like, ooh, man, I'm going to be a beat writer for somebody. You know, Jason Whitlock was great in his time in Kansas City. And I was like, this is what I want. And those brothers always had a way of just setting the scene. Like the first paragraph is just describing what you see, what you smell, what this was like, and then how it made you feel. Then you start telling people the actual sequences of events that actually unfolded. And to me, that's what I was trying to do a little bit more with this special, was just talk a little bit about the feeling of just abandonment and loneliness, and still serving enough jokes in there to where it doesn't delve into some, you know, I ain't trying to make you sad. I'm just trying to acknowledge where we at and what we feeling and what I think we can do to get up out of it. So that's all I was trying to do with this special, man, was just have something that was a little bit different from me just going, can you believe the laws that this government did? I didn't did that. I did it for 8 years on Daily Show. I did it for 3 straight specials. This one was more about us and who we are as a people in reaction to all of the other stuff that the first 3 specials was about.
Staying on Lonely Flowers, Roy, you know, in your exploration of isolation during the digital age, man, you touched on, you made my mind kind of get to working about sports fandom and community. Now, with the way we are living in an isolated world, do you think that sports fandom is the last sort of community that we have, or did hot take culture kind of ruin that?
I think that politics more so, hot take culture created camps, right? So the idea of LeBron or Kobe, Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese, like that type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
What has made people blindly entrenched in their views, I think politics created a way for us to really just go, I don't care what you say or what you do. There's nothing you can do to ever change my mind, and I won't consider any of the facts. Versus back in the day, you could have a legitimate debate, and I could see where you would think that. So, like before LeBron and Kobe came along, there was always the Jordan to Bill Russell comparisons in terms of greatness. And then you could dissect the difference of the two eras. And Dr. J was sneaking to the conversation a little bit too, right? Like, but a Dr. J fan would still say, yes, but Jordan also does his thing. Versus now, they just go, that ain't my GOAT. He trash. He down there. Like, dang, man. And I think a lot of that is a mixture of debate culture and what politics became when politics became ridiculously divisive during 2016. Because if you look at politics to a degree, politics started taking on political television coverage. I'm talking about media now.
Yeah.
It started to take on a little bit more of the style of argumentative sports journalism that was ushered in with Around the Horn and PTI. And I know that Crossfire on CNN was here before that. And you could argue that the sports reporter, so my pops was a journalist.
Yeah.
So we watched all the Sunday morning Charles Kuralt joints and all that. And then we would switch over to John Saunders and everybody over on ESPN. Sports reporters was a little more buttoned down, revered. You know, it was more of a discussion than an argument. Sure. But once things took off and debate culture became the type of quick bite-sized content that a lot of sports companies started creating, politics started reflecting that even more so. And so, you know, politics lit the fire, sports journalism threw the flame on debate culture. And then the next thing you know, everybody's got debates and argument shows. And then you got the housewife shows and like they arguing, it just to the point where just tension is the content. And I just think we defer to tension now. I don't I don't like where sports is now in that regard, especially basketball and football. You know, more so than anything, whereas at least with baseball, the argument isn't about greats. The argument is about the behavioral advancements of baseball culture as it relates to old heads versus new heads and how dare you celebrate a home. Why you flip that bat? Like that
unwritten rules. Yeah, unwritten rules.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just where I think it is right now.
Yeah, and I know your dad, you know, he started the National Black Network, I believe, but one of your
as a co-founder, NBN,
one of your passions is the Negro League. Road to Rickwood was a podcast that you've been involved with for a number of years now. But speaking of the Negro Leagues, I read a great debate on Twitter about Jackie Robinson and when he broke the color line and he was chosen because he had the temperament to take on the hostile acts that were going to come his way because of racism. But other people were firing back that Jackie Robinson was actually one of the better players of that era. You know, they try to act like he was an average player. You know, he was rookie of the year, I believe, and when he in the National League, I believe, when he came in. Just some historical perspective on that from you would be great.
Not only was Jackie Robinson rookie of the year when he first came into the league, Jackie Robinson was rookie of the year, and that team went to the World Series. They won the World Series the next year. So you come in and go back-to-back, also while getting called N-word on a regular basis. And if you think that a man in 1948 was handed rookie of the year, it had to be no doubt statistics. Like, they had to give him rookie of the year with they lip pouting.
Right.
And probably didn't have no ceremony, probably didn't even call him, probably just mailed him the trophy and probably had some dog shit in the box. So
the temperament,
I don't even know if I can cuss on this. I don't know if y'all Christian. I go to church sometimes.
Oh, you good.
Like, do you.
I don't like that because, like, that was strategic. There was a reason behind that because you are trying to psychologically permeate the minds of bigots, which a lot of people would argue that, you know, that's just a Martin and Malcolm argument of do you try to negotiate with your oppressor or do you kick them in the teeth? And so I think a lot of the kick oppression in the teeth folks would have rather seen a black man get chosen who could have gone the year before Jackie. Statistically might not have been as good.
Yeah.
But if he gonna fight and storm the mound, he'd have been out of there in two weeks. And then where's the progress? It's no different than when you look at why Rosa Parks was chosen. You know, on some, like when they make the argument about Rosa Parks and she was a plant and there was a strategy and there was people already not giving up their seat. Yeah, that's probably true. As a matter of fact, it is true. It's not probably true. But there was a strategy in how you ran this political campaign to try and change the law. So I don't have a problem with Jackie Robinson being chosen for that reason. I watched 42. I thought it was a good sidebar. 42 is probably one of the better baseball movies in the portrayal of how baseball is actually played, the physicality of it. Like, I don't know if y'all watch sports movies like me where you go, he don't hoop for real.
That ain't how you cross over. Right.
That's how I watch baseball. I mean, I didn't play it I played baseball through high school, but you can tell in 42 they actually use college baseball players. It wasn't like when you go back and watch Major League. I love the first Major League as a comedy, but as a baseball mechanics film,
it's like Gary Cooper in the Lou Gehrig story, the Pride of the Yankees. You know, you know, great actor, ball player, his acting kind of supersedes his lack of baseball acumen, but still, you know,
it
faded really quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I 1,000% support that, and I think that part of his history is important. I don't like the erasure of it that's starting to happen with this current administration where they're taking any and everything that was remotely black. Because it used to be about, no DEI going forward. Now it's about let's eliminate all past instances of what we define as DEI, which is just erasure of history, which just goes back to everything else that we've been talking about with black history being eliminated from schools and a discussion around CRT from a couple of years ago. So, you know, I support what I am happy that baseball integration happened the way it happened. And I have no reason to second guess or critique history. We're here, and it's black players playing now. What else do you want?
Yeah. Moving on to the NBA, man. And this is a discussion that Chris and I have had with our other guests. But I bring up, and my son Chris is going to get irritated with me when I do this. I like that. You know, I don't live in the past, but I'm Unk. You know, you mentioned being called Unk, like in your special, and I started getting called Unk about 10 years ago. I'm like, what the hell is the Unk? What does that mean? Yeah. This means that I'm old. And, but during the 70s.
But revered.
Revered. Okay. But we had the black exploitation films of the 70s that took so much criticism for stereotypes and too much violence and gratuitous violence that they disappeared off the face of the earth pretty much after about a 7 or 8 year period. And correct me if I'm wrong, but somewhere in the Superfly, Shaft, and all these
Dolomites,
books but black writers, black directors, black actors, you know, the way the NBA is getting criticized now by everybody, black journalists, white journalists, just the league is the style of play.
It ain't exciting.
It's not exciting.
Too many threes.
Guys are taking too many days off with, what's that called, Chris, when you rest?
Load
management is ruining the game. And I'm hearing Magic talk to Byron Scott about how we wanted to play all 80. It just seems like we're headed in a danger zone, boy, where we're you know what I mean? Where the popularity of the league is going to be at stake, and with the popularity being harmed, it means the ability to generate income and TV viewers and all that stuff. You know, we're biting the hand that feeds us in a lot of ways. I don't know. Just your perception of that from where you sit.
I think if I'm not mistaken, NBA ratings are down.
Yeah, they said 40% was the number that I heard at one point in time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's a degree of auto correction that happens in sports. You know, I do think that the NFL intruding upon Christmas Day with the Christmas Day game on Netflix last year was a big deal. The homie of Amani Jones had a really good opinion on that, and just in how Christmas Day was the NBA's corner.
Yeah.
This is our corner. And Netflix pulled up and set up shop on your damn corner. So the fact that they even think that they can dare to do that, I think that the NBA is a star-driven league, you know, whereas the NFL, to me, is a little bit more, the product is football. You love football, you're going to probably watch no matter who it is. It could be the Browns versus the Jaguars, and it's still going to do a decent number. I think if the NBA can pull, you know, a little bit more of star treatment, I think also – there's been a, how can I put it? I think that because the game is global and because there are more foreign players in the game, foreign stars in the game now, I think they have a different temperament as well. Mm. And I think that that necessarily doesn't always play into the drama and the theater that is the NBA. The NBA is, oh, it's Ewing versus Olajuwon. Oh, but if Jokic doesn't buy into that type of hype, and if you can't get, like, I mean, honestly, the Luka trade is probably the most exciting thing to happen in the league right now. Like, that's one of the most exciting things to happen this year.
Yeah.
And Luka's not going to, like, talk shit in the way that Kevin Garnett would have.
So we need more Doc and Bird choking each other, is what you're telling us.
That iconic poster that I
have on my wall at home.
I'm saying if you give teams three techs instead of two, you might see a little juice, a little more juice in the action. But, you know, we also live in a short attention span theater, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people want things to be quicker and, you know, faster. You know, baseball saw ratings increase with the pitch clock just by shortening the game. So, you know, maybe there's a less is more proposition. You know, I don't think you go to 10-minute quarters, but maybe you shorten the season by 5 or 6 games and make the games even more important. Like, there could be some sort of way to increase the tension, maybe, but I don't have a problem with teams shooting threes. Like, when you look at, like, the way cycles are in our society, like, the way we're reverting back to fun, how can I put it? Like, everything's getting remade right now, right? We're all in remakes because everybody's broke, and nobody, every studio ain't got no money. When you look at, like, let's say sitcoms from the late 80s through the 90s were a very fun time, and they're very silly and goofy and stuff like that. I think we're going to get back to that, because that was also coming on the backside of Ronald Reagan, and society was down bad. And also there was war. The Gulf War started, I think, 90 or 91. So you needed something that was emotionally an escape. So I think that there's a degree of a cycle to this stuff. My hope is that Chet Holmgren and Wimby, as teams try to figure out ways to defend them, I got to get a big to stop your big.
Yeah.
Because bigs are the way to go. And so once you start playing the game under the basket again, the way it was in the 90s, then maybe we get back to the excitement of teams actually playing more in the paint and not being out on the perimeter. But, you know, Wimby can also shoot a damn three. So he might not be under the basket that much more.
To your point, though, Roy, about sort of the 80s and 90s and what was going on, you know, it was what you said, but there was also a lot of drama, man. It was a lot of fights. You talked about how the league might need more of that type of interaction between people.
Yeah, you need to let the hard fouls happen. Because if somebody got fouled hard and they don't get the call, what you think they're going to do when they come back up the floor in transition? I'm going to play a little bit harder because I'm pissed off. So I wouldn't mind if every team had two Draymonds.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. No. What's wrong with that? Like, y'all get mad at Draymond. Draymond, the only player I see playing throwback basketball.
Yeah,
he is.
I'm going to play hard. I'm not going to compliment you. Maybe when he retires, maybe Draymond turns a corner and goes, hey, man, that was all in the spirit of competition. We are friends. Like, Paul Pierce is like that now for the most part. But, when Paul Pierce was playing, he hated everybody. If you were my teammate, I hate your guts.
Yeah, he's a dog.
But now we're cool. I think maybe you get back to that to some degree, but it's going to be hard for teams to find those players. And then also the bigger issue at the college level, I think because of NIL, you have players playing hopscotch every year. So they're learning under different coaches, playing under different systems. So you don't completely know what you're getting in a player right away. Because you don't have 4 years of them doing the same thing under the same system to know what their true abilities may or may not be.
Yeah. And Roy, so speaking of the NBA, face of the league, there's been some conversation about that. LeBron made a statement about, you know, why would these young fellas want to be the face of the league? Because that just gives the media a chance to poop. He used another word, but to poop all over them and their careers. Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek Freak, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that our show is kind of based out of. Why do you think he has not become the face of the 2-time MVP, MVP finals winner, NBA champion, 17 out of 19 from the free throw line for a guy that struggled a 50-point game in a closeout game against Phoenix game 6? What else does he have to do, or can he do anything else to be the face of the league? What is it about Giannis that has not made him the automatic kind of face of the league based on what he's accomplished?
I wonder if part of it is lack of association because he came from overseas. You know, I don't think that there's necessarily, like, if you look at him versus Allen Iverson, where Iverson, I could argue, was not only the face of the league, but he inspired young Americans.
Yeah.
Like, just on some, they saw themselves in him.
Yeah.
I don't know how much younger NBA fans see themselves in the players who come in from overseas, and sense of the relatability from the early ages. Jordan was around in North Carolina. We followed his story for 4 years. If I'm not mistaken, he played for four. He played three.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it was Worthy played four.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the idea that you see him and you follow him in college basketball used to be high drama.
Yeah.
And so you could follow these players from college into the pros and see the continuation of their story. So even as a rookie, I'm already invested versus if you look at someone like, and I think the same thing with Wimby, where Wimby, he's a little bit more of a freak than Giannis.
Yeah.
If we're just talking about just on the physicality of it all and what he'll be. But, you know, I wonder how much of it is being able to have a sense of relatability to American fans and American culture, and maybe that just takes a little bit more time. I mean, you can go all the way back to Yao Ming if you want. If we're just talking about freaks of nature from another country where people had a lot of love for him, Shaq bigged up Yao a lot. But I don't know if Yao was ever as popular as some of the other bigs, you know. And if we look at, you know, if we look at Giannis's accomplishments, on paper, he absolutely should be the face of the league. Now, is that the wrong endorsement? Does he not smile right? Is it his accent? Does that throw people off? Yeah. Maybe he's too nice. Americans love a good trash talker.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he's not that. He's not given, you know, billboard material, a poster board material, you know, for teams to play against, you know, because I think also to a degree, you play overseas, you just let your playing do the talking. You ain't chirping all the time. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think someone is like, you know, authentic as Anthony Edwards is better suited for that type of role as face of the league, you know, kind of unfiltered, no holes barred, inspirational.
That dirty South, you know, that
goes far in American culture.
Here's the thing, man, is that everybody knows somebody like Ant in their circle. Even white people. You know a black dude like that work at your job or work out in the warehouse. I don't know anybody like Giannis.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe that relatability plays a factor in that, because I can anticipate what Ant gonna do. I can see Ant talking trash.
Yeah.
And like, I love NBA's Twitter account now, because they put out more of that hot mic stuff that's happening on the court.
Right.
Yeah. When the boys get to chirping with each other,
you trash.
That's theater.
That for me, yeah.
That helps. That helps. That's more useful than me seeing him dunk.
Yeah.
Truth be told.
Wow.
I would rather see that. That's theater. That's battle rapping to a degree.
Okay.
So Ant does that beautifully. But he's smart, though. Ant's smart because he never claims face of the league.
Be the face.
Which only makes him more the face.
Desirable it's to be just the like, face.
Yeah, which is kind of what Jordan did. Jordan just was always passing the toilet. Oh, no, it's a team. The team do their thing. But then he get out there and he put up 50 on your ass.
You know,
taking IVs between quarters.
I want to get back to, before we let you go, Lonely Flowers and the Bubble Man. The Bubble Man, the $74 ticket Bubble Man that you saw in New York City. And that was one of the better stories in stand-up comedy that I've heard. And just talking about, you know, when he started talking, I don't know where he was from, but he started talking about how, you know, one moment passes, another moment's going to come along and all that. But then you ended it. You ended it, bro. Turned it to the lady and said, I don't think we're going to make it. After the Bubble Man's wife came out, you saw how together they were and all that stuff. How much truth is that?
That's 1,000% a true story. The Bubble Man story, without giving all of it away, the Bubble Man story is just about how important it is in this world, even if you're lonely. If you can find one person, you don't have to have a circle of friends yet. If you can find one person you vibe with, one person you're cool with, then start there with that. And then that will grow.
Yeah.
And to me, that whole joke is just the observation about, I think I start the joke with just a simple premise line of, have you ever been, you ever seen two people so happy, it ruins the date that you're on?
Right.
And if you don't feel about the person you're with, like what you see across the room, then maybe you're with the wrong person.
Mm.
Or you need to have a conversation with that person about how do we get on the same page? Yeah. We ain't in rhythm. Right. We ain't in lock and equally yoked, as they say at church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of church, man, the other thing too that stands out to me was the Monday phone calls with your mom. Are those still going on?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I talked to my mom.
And I just say that to say, Roy, my mom passed with Chris about 3 or 4 years ago. Man, I miss more than, and we had our differences, we had our moments, but man, you can't imagine how much I miss. I still keep her voicemails from singing happy birthday to me on my birthday, and I play those her singing on my birthday, man. But just from that standpoint, man, you just don't know how much you know, you will miss that when the opportunity is not there. And I just encourage you to keep on doing what you're doing.
Man, thank you, brother. I was trying to find the call, my call log from today. yeah, no, but yeah, I talked to her earlier today at, oh, wait, there it is. Was it 44 minutes? I don't know if you can see that or not. Yeah.
44 minutes of conversation. All right.
44 minutes. And we taping on a Monday as we speak. Yes, we're recording this podcast on a Monday. So, yeah, we wrap for a minute.
Yeah, no, good for you. Good for you, man. Well, listen, man, we thank you so much. Man, we'd like to get you on again, man, as the season progresses, as playoffs progress, even next year sometime. But we appreciate the time that you spent with us today. Have I Got News for You on CNN. Roy is the host. Lonely Flower is a terrific stand-up. I highly recommend on Hulu, man. And you know, you're one of the, you know what I like about you, Roy, and I hate to extend this interview, but you really, you take your comedy serious enough to research, to know about it, to know facial expressions, know the round face can only talk about certain subject matter. I mean
yeah. You know, I ain't got the jawline to do aggressive Chris Rock comedy. But I can't be angry. Wow. Nobody buys it. Nobody buys it.
You're a student of your craft, and that's
absolutely.
I don't know if that's something that's routine in comedy right now or not. But I just really respect and appreciate just how serious you are about what you do. So and
I appreciate
it's reflected, man, in your success too, man.
You're one of them ones, brother.
We appreciate you stopping by, man. Thanks for taking the time. Come by here, District. We appreciate you.
Hey, thank you. All right. Appreciate it.
This has been a Bucks Plus Audio production.